Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 21, text 17. The name of the chapter is The Gopis Glorify Krishna's Flute. Purna Pulinya Urukaya Padapcharaga. Shri Kumkumena Daita Stana Manditena. Tadarshana Smara Ruchas Trina Rushitena. Limpantyanan Anana Kucheshu Jahustara Adim. Purna Pulinya Urugaya Padabjaraga.
Purna Pulinya Urugaya Padabjaraga.
Shri Kumkumena Daita Stana Manditena. Tadarshana Smarara Rujas Trin Rashitena.
Tadarshana Smarara Rujas Trin Rashitena.
Limpanchanana Kushichu Jahustad Adim.
Limpanchanana
Purna Pulinya Urugaya Padabjaraga.
Purna Pulinya Urugaya Padabjaraga.
Shri Kumkumena Daita Stana Manditena.
Shri Kumkumena Daita Stana Manditena.
Tadarshana Smara Rujas Trin Rushitena.
Tadarshana Smara Rujas Trin Rushitena.
Limpanchananda Kucheshu Jahustar Adim. Somebody else? Vaishnava?
Purna Pulinya Urugaya Padabjaraga.
Purna Pulinya Urugaya Padabjaraga. Shri Kumkumena Daita Stana Manditena.
Tadarshana
Smara Rujas Trina Rushitena. Limpanchananda Kucheshu Rujas Trina Rushitena. Purna Pulinya Urugaya Padabjaraga.
Shri Kumkumena Daita Stana Manditena. Tadarshana Smara Rujas Trina Rushitena.
Tadarshana Smara Rujas Trina Rushitena. Limpancha Ananda Kucheshu Vaishnavis. Purna Pulinya Urugaya Padabjaraga.
Shri Kumkumena Daita Stana Manditena.
Shri Kumkumena Daita Stana Manditena.
Tadarshana smara vajastrena ruchite na. Rinpoche anana kucheshu jahustu adem. Purna purinda urugaya padabjaraga. Shri kumkumena daitasana mandikena. Tadarshana smara rujastrina ruchitena. Lim pancha anana uche shita husta adin purnak.
Fully satisfied.
Pulindya.
The wives of the Shabara tribe.
Urugaya.
Of Lord Krishna.
Pada abja.
From the lotus feet.
Raga.
Of reddish color.
Shri kumkumena.
By the transcendental kumkum powder.
Daita.
Of his girlfriends.
Stana.
The breasts.
Manditena.
Which had decorated.
Tat.
Of that.
Darshana.
By the sight.
Smara.
Of Cupid.
Ruja.
Feeling the torment.
Trina.
Upon the blades of grass.
Rishitena.
Attached.
Limpantya.
Sneering.
Anana.
Upon their faces.
Kucheshu,
and breasts.
Jahu,
they gave up.
Tat,
that.
Adhim,
mental pain.
Translation.
The Aborigine women of the Vrindavan area became disturbed by lust when they see, become disturbed by lust when they see the grass marked with reddish kumkum powder. Endowed with the color of Krishna's lotus feet, this powder originally decorated the breasts of his beloveds, and when the Aborigines women smear it on their faces and breasts, they give up all their anxiety. Purport. And although it's by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, it's actually by Prabhupada because it's quoting Prabhupada from Krishna book. Srila Prabhupada explains this verse as follows. The wanton Aborigines girls also became fully satisfied when they smeared their faces and breasts with the dust of Vrindavan, which was reddish from the touch of Krishna's lotus feet. The Aborigines girls had very full breasts, and they were also very lusty. But when their lovers felt their breasts, they were not very satisfied. When they came out into the midst of the forest, they saw that while Krishna was walking, some of the leaves and creepers of Vrindavan turned reddish from the kumkum powder that fell from his lotus feet. His lotus feet were held by the gopis on their breasts, which were also smeared with kumkum powder. But when Krishna traveled to the Vrindavan forest with Balaram and his boyfriends, the reddish powder fell on the ground of the Vrindavan forest. So the lusty Aborigines girls, while looking toward Krishna playing his flute, saw the reddish kumkum on the ground and immediately took it and smeared it over their faces and breasts. In this way, they became fully satisfied, although they were not satisfied when their lovers touched their breasts. All material lusty desires can be immediately satisfied if one comes in contact with Krishna consciousness. Om Manganati Mirandasyaganan Ganashavakaya Chakshur and Militam Jaina Tasma Sri Gravain Mahamukam Kuritivachalam Pangam Mangayate Grim Yat Kripatva Mahambande Sri Guru Dinataranam Panshakapaturubyascha Kripa Sangribyacha Patitanam Pavanavyo Vaishnavyo Maha. So it's at times like this where we're we feel great gratitude for having Srila Prabhupada as our spiritual guide through the Srimad Bhagavatam. And considering how, I was considering how Vyasadeva, he originally wrote the Vedas, and he was not satisfied. So his spiritual master instructed him that, you know, it's true, the Vedas offer something for everyone, and attempting to be kind to all living entities in whatever level of spiritual advancement they are, the Vedas offer some opportunity for them to advance from where they are to the ultimate goal of human life, which is to develop a loving relationship with Krishna in service. And so hearing the instruction of Narada, Vyasadeva distilled the essence of the Srimad, of the Vedas, and he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered the cream, Nigama Kalpataror, the ripened fruit of the Vedic literature, kicking out all cheating. You can't hear me? Okay. Kicking out all cheating aspects of spiritual practice and focusing like a laser on the need to develop pure love of Krishna and go back to Godhead. But still, even if we look at the Bhagavatam takes its time through the first nine cantos to raise us to a level, raise the living entities to a level where they could conceivably be able to understand the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam and be able to enter into the leelas being described here. We're just getting going here in the Venu Gita. We've yet to come to the rasa dance. And there's a certain intimacy, and certainly in this verse, there's a certain level of description which would be difficult for the average person who's not purified, who doesn't really understand the personality of Godhead to relish this and understand not only that these are nice stories, but this is about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the beautiful story of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what Prabhupada called Krishna book. So we start with the Bhagavatam, you know, understanding that Krishna is the source of everything. He lies down in the causal ocean, and millions of universes emanate from the pores of his body. In each one of those universes, he lies down again in the second Vishnu form, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, and from his navel, the lotus flower sprouts, and from that, Lord Brahma sits. And there's a whole description of how Lord Brahma is empowered. All the ingredients he needs to create the material universes are packed up in the lotus flower stem. He gets instructions via the flute song so that he understands what to do, and he creates the universes. And then he creates the living entity, not the universes, but everything in the universes. And then he creates all the living entities. And again, Vishnu goes in the heart of every single living entity, every single atom, as the supersoul, as Paramatma. And Krishna is the source of all that. And we read in the later in the third chapter of how Krishna is the source of all the incarnations. Every incarnation, so many are named. Many are brought up again in the Bhagavatam and discussed in great detail. But in that third chapter of the Bhagavatam, first canto, they're described very quickly, one after the other. Many, many of them. Prabhupada explained some are minor and some are major, but they're all coming from Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sach Chit Ananda Vigraha. He's the source of everything, the source of all the incarnations, Ete Sankula Punsam Krishna Stu Bhagavan Svayam. So they're all coming from him. So we get an idea that this is no ordinary person that we're talking about. This is bigger than a reality that we can conceive of between our two ears. And we go through the Bhagavatam and we hear stories of great deeds and amazing feats and demons killed and, conquered and wars fought and amazing interventions in Krishna's pastimes with his devotees. He has one of the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Poshanam, which is the mercy or the protective mercy that Krishna shows towards his devotees. And we see it again and again. Uttara runs to Krishna when there's a Brahmastra coming at him, and she says, Pahi, Pahi, Mahayogin, save me from this fiery weapon that's coming at me. And Krishna enters her womb and he protects Parikshit Maharaj. And so many times again and again in the seventh canto we read about how the incarnation of the Lord came out of a pillar, right? He appeared out of a pillar because he was so disturbed by the fact that some puny wasp-like demon was harassing his devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. And so Hiranyakashipu approached Prahlad Maharaj with this atheistic mentality. You think there's a God? Where is he? Show me where he is. Well, he's everywhere, Father. Well, is he in this pillar? Yes, Father, he's in the pillar. And he struck the pillar with his fist, and then he heard this roar, this unearthly roar. And then, with a sword, armed, wondering what's going to happen, Nisringadev came out of the pillar, bigger than life, more far out than he could ever conceive, and killed him in a way that he was not able to conjure up when he got his benediction from Lord Brahma. So we have so many stories leading up in the Bhagavatam, in the first 10 cantos of the Bhagavatam, first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam, even in the beginning of the 10th canto, where Krishna is showing that he's not an ordinary person, that he's a special, that he's the supreme personality of Godhead in every sphere, from the second he's born, even appearing in the form of a baby. First he appeared with four arms, and then he went into a two-armed form for Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house of Kamsa. And before that, in so many ways, we understand again and again and again and again and again and again how devotees do lifetimes of penances and go through severe austerities and call upon Krishna in so many different ways. Hopefully, by the time we get to the 10th canto, we'll get it. At least conceptually, we'll understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because if we don't get it, then we read these stories and these pastimes and these exchanges with Krishna's most intimate loving devotees, the gopis, and we might, just might, think of them incorrectly. We might just consider that these are the ordinary lusty affairs between a man and a woman. There are stories, the stories abound of British professors that missionaries who came to India and said such things as, how can you worship a god who dances in the middle of the night with other men's wives, who puts his feet on the breasts of the gopis? I mean, what are you thinking? Because to them, God, the personality of God is a different thing. He's sitting in a big throne, maybe on the clouds, and sometimes you see a track, he's got a light bulb, his head, and you know, he's speaking in a big booming voice, and he's telling everybody that, but this is, and certainly this is an aspect of God, just like the judge in the high court, he's an aspect of the boy's father. He has a son, the son climbs on his back and walks around the room, but he, in the judge form, when he's sitting there behind the bench, he's a force to be reckoned with, and everybody calls him very politely, Your Honor, and everybody stands when he walks in the room, and no one thinks that he's just an ordinary fellow because he has the whole world in his hands for that particular frame of the world. And so the attempt is made on the part of Vyasadeva to bring us to an understanding of the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that we don't run the risk of thinking cheaply of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in any sphere, even when he's the kumkum powder that he got from putting his feet on the breasts of the gopis falls on the Vrindavan grass, and the Pralingam women put it on their breasts, and they're relieved of all their lusty desires. So then, what to do? Because, you know, there's 10 cantos there, and it's just not a matter of reading them, right? I had an experience here. I was in the pujari room, and there was a conversation going on, which I was listening, I couldn't help but overhear. So it was a conversation about the very intimate understanding or very advanced understanding of the pastimes of Krishna and the different rasas and the highest rasa, Madhurya rasa. And I made mention, I said, well, you know, first, before we try to enter into these rasas, we should really understand Srila Prabhupada's books. And the comment was made, I already read those books. That was the answer. I already read those books. So, but how many times can we read these books? And what does it mean, already read them? We never read them, because we can read them and go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And every time we read them, what to speak of Bhagavatam, even Bhagavad Gita. We can read Bhagavad Gita and our whole life, nothing else but Bhagavad Gita. And we can have amazing realizations about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have to not only get the content, but we have to get the intent and the ultimate spiritual conclusions of the first nine cantos of the Bhagavatam, and we have to become purified. And this was Prabhupada's emphasis for us. This is why Prabhupada wrote Krishna book when he did, because he anticipated, although I'm not sure he anticipated Google Guru, and I'm not sure he anticipated Ras Bihari Lal and Lowy Bazaar either, you know, translating or paying for people to translate unlimited intimate pastimes of Krishna with no adhikar whatsoever necessarily. And there, you know, unlimited availability. But Prabhupada was afraid that he would leave us before he had the opportunity to translate the entire 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and so he gave us Krishna book. And he wove his Bhaktivedanta purports. You can't read the stories without getting the purport, just like you see at the end of this this paragraph here that's taken from the Krishna book, the last sentence. All material lusty desires can immediately be satisfied if one comes in contact with Krishna consciousness. So, okay, contact with the kumkum on the breast and all these lusty desires and, you know, aborigines women, but the bottom line is you come in contact with Krishna and your lusty desires will become purified if you engage in devotional service, if you come deeply in contact with Krishna consciousness. So Lord Chaitanya, he made that process very easy for us. He gave us the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. The six Goswamis distilled that even further and gave us a lot of opportunity to make advancement, and also gave us the opportunity to study through their lens the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan and all the devotees in Vrindavan and elsewhere who are render loving service to Krishna. So we have the parampara, we have our we have the Bhagavatam, we have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have Srila Prabhupada, the six Goswamis, we have Srila Prabhupada, our own Srila Prabhupada, who came here, and I want to read you a letter. I've referred to this letter before, but I didn't do it justice, so I want to actually read it. This letter was written in 1956, and that's long before Prabhupada came to America, and it was written to the President of the Indian Union. And it should be noted on two levels. One on the level of, you'll understand, and the other on the level of how he addresses this person. That we have such a hard time with authority. Huh? Sometimes it's very difficult for us to accept that, you know, the temple president or the GBC or whoever, whatever, they know better than us. But we should notice how Prabhupada addresses this person. He says, His Excellency Dr. Rajendra Prasad, may it please your most exalted honor, kindly accept my humble obeisances. It is the custom of India from a time immemorial that a citizen of the state would approach the king to express his grievances for redemption, and the king would very kindly consider his case as duty-bound and give him necessary relief by the royal judgment. At the present moment, Your Excellency is seated in the position of the king by the will and grace of the Lord. As a true Vaishnava, I must accept Your Excellency as the representative of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, as he has expressed himself in the pages of Bhagavad Gita. As such, I beg to lay before you, your most exalted honor, the following few lines for favorable consideration, and do the needful in pure consciousness. Your Excellency is the representative of Sri Krishna by authority, and I hope Sri Krishna will direct you from within in the matter of my transcendental service to him. I beg to submit herewith that by the grace of Sri Krishna, through his mercy personified, my spiritual master, I have realized it most thoroughly that going back to Godhead is the highest privilege of mankind, and that it is the supreme perfection of human life. Unfortunately, the present-day human civilization is very much attracted with the beauty of apara prakriti, the illusory material nature, and as such, they are overpowered by a demoniac form of propensity in the atheistic setup of civilization manifested in the matter of sense gratification. This tendency is dangerously harmful to the real progress of life. The aim of life should be to make a sincere effort to go back to Godhead. But contrary to this, the tendency is to go back to hell, or in the cycle of evolutionary animal life, as is described in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Please, therefore, save them from this great fall down. Believe me or not, I have got the clue of going back to Godhead just after leaving my present material body. And in order to take along with me all my contemporary men and women of the world, I have started my paper back to Godhead as one of the means to the way. Please do not think of me as wonderful or mad when I say that I shall go back to Godhead after leaving my present material body. It is quite possible for everyone and all of us. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said very clearly that whosoever may adopt the specific principle of accepting Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, he will be able to achieve the highest transcendental goal of life. Never mind what he is, either born untouchable, a fallen woman, a laborer, or a man, dealing in rupees, annas, and pais. His being so, what is there difficult for a pious Brahmin and devoted king for going back to Godhead? Everyone should therefore adopt this principle of going back to Godhead in order to get released from the world of miseries with temporary existence. This fact is corroborated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the practical demonstrator of Bhagavad Gita and as the most magnanimous incarnation of Sri Krishna, the personality of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has made the path of going back to Godhead so easy for everyone that even a boy of the world can swim across the ocean of religiosity. Although it is injected with so many dangerous animals ready to devour up a fallen person in that great massive water, I have simply adopted the easy method of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just suitable to the modern people in general. And as such, I am feeling as sure of going back to Godhead as I feel without any doubt after taking my dinner that I have eaten to my satisfaction. This feeling is a necessary concomitant factor of the great science of devotional service in the approved line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I am therefore very eager to broadcast the secret of my success to all men and women of the world as a natural consequence, and I am seeking Your Excellency's help and cooperation in this great attempt of transcendental service. And he says, enclosed 12 issues of Back to Godhead magazine. And then he says, to make a worldwide propaganda for this most essential service to humanity, I am crying alone in the wilderness at the present moment. So please help me in this noble cause and oblige. And then he signs his letter, yours in the service of the Lord, A.C. Bhaktivedanta.
What year was that?
1956.
Was it responded to?
I read that it was not responded to. So this is in 1956. Prabhupada had an idea that we could all go back to Godhead at the end of this life. Amazing. Every man, every woman, every child, even fallen, doesn't matter, untouchable, living in America, no problem. So Srila Prabhupada, with that mentality, gave us his Bhaktivedanta purports to the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, to the Srimad Bhagavatam. He gave us his careful, studied, carefully crafted system for achieving spiritual perfection. No haphazard, no whimsical. Very, very carefully, he studied us. He studied us carefully, and based on what he saw, based on the unbelievable, here he sees that we're fallen. He knows we're fallen. 1956, he knew he was going to go to the West and we were going to be fallen. But when he got off the boat, it was worse than he thought. It's like you go into an operation and the doctor thinks you're going to need a minor thing, and he cuts you open, finds you have stage 4, you know, he thinks, oh my God, it's worse than I thought. But Prabhupada didn't give up. And instead of giving up, he became more and more determined, more and more enthusiastic, more and more thoughtful in crafting this system which he gave us for our purification so that we could go back to Godhead, so that we wouldn't commit offenses by thinking Krishna to be an ordinary human being. When we come to this 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam especially, it's extremely important that we don't think we know what's going on when in reality we don't know what's going on. I was thinking that the example is that we have to become so purified and so intimately involved in Krishna's service that we become part of Krishna's family in our heart. Prabhupada was part of Krishna's family. In his heart, he was connected with Krishna. And therefore, he could give us these Bhaktivedanta purports in such a deep and realized way because he had a heart connection. Krishna was part of his family. He was part of Krishna's family. And we need to come to that level of having that loving relationship with Krishna so that, and purified enough so that we can enter into Krishna's lila with our heart before we try to enter into Krishna's lila by entering into Krishna's lila, by dancing with the Krishna in the rasa dance or whatever, huh? So the thought comes to mind, I was listening to Bhojan Prabhu explain, that we read every day the newspaper, or look at the news, or maybe we don't, but we hear somehow or other about the news. It comes to us, whether we like it or not, very often. Sometimes we go for it, which is a mistake. Prabhupada said it gave him a headache. But anyway, we hear the death of so many people being shot in schools and so many things, and we feel some remorse. We feel sad that these people in Iraq and Afghanistan and all these places are getting blown up. In New York, I was just reading, in Toronto, there was huge floods. The cars are in water up to the windshield in Toronto. So you know, and people are naturally getting hurt and dying everywhere. People are dying everywhere. And we read, and every day, and we offer our condolences, we send a donation, we feel bad, but we forget very quickly. But the closer it gets to home, if someone that we love very dearly passes away, or someone we love very dearly even is ill, then it consumes our consciousness, what to speak of our body, which we love very dearly, right? If that body gets sick or is in danger, then it consumes our mind. We can't think of anything else. We need to deal with it. And we don't just think about it for a few minutes and then pass it off, because they're part of our family, because they're in our heart. Their welfare is of great concern to us. And so we think about them all the time. And this is the mentality of the residents of Vrindavan. This is the mentality of the people that we're wanting to interact with in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the cowherd boys, even the cows. These living entities, they're completely 100% absorbed in Krishna. They have no other agenda, none. They're not thinking of themselves, of their welfare, of their birth, of their death, of their loved ones. Even here, the gopis are saying, oi, our husbands, they're not saying oi, but they're, when it translates into Yiddish, they're thinking, oi, what's with our husbands? They, you know, the husbands of the deer, the husbands of the clouds, they're the husbands of the demigoddesses. They're encouraging their spouses to think about Krishna, to fall in love with Krishna. And our husbands, they don't get it together. But when we think of Krishna, we want to go to Krishna, and they hold us back. They pull us back. What's going on? So then their families, their children, everything is completely dedicated to Krishna. We read in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, my wife, my family, everything is yours. My house, everything is yours. Right? I give you everything. So if I ask the question, how many of you want to go back to Godhead, then everyone will, right? How many of you want to go back to Godhead? So everybody's got one, some people have two hands up. Everybody wants to go back to Godhead. How many people want to pay the price? Yeah, the numbers are less. Now he has one hand up, before he had two hands up. But the price is everything. Everything you've got. Everything you've got in your back pocket, everything you've got in your bank account, everything you've got in your life. Everyone you love or think you love, everyone you have a relationship with, all these things have to be put on the line and offered to Krishna. Not that you have to ignore them or not have affection for them, but you have to show that affection by offering them to Krishna. We have to be dedicated 100% to Krishna's service. And that's the qualification for entering into this lila. And then, how do we get there? It seems so difficult. Everything is a scary word. And surrender is a scary word. Atmanivedanam, it's a scary word. Several words, right? But Krishna's devotional service is Sri Krishna Karshani. It's explained that it controls Krishna. Pure loving service controls Krishna. The gopis, they controlled Krishna. Srimati Radharani controlled Krishna. So Krishna doesn't give control easily. Just like we don't give our passwords away easily. We don't give people our checkbook easily, our credit card easily. Because if we give it with the password, then they have control of our money, our most dear thing. Oh my God, we don't even want to give them our computer. So why should Krishna give himself to us if we're not worthy of his trust, if we're not completely 100% sold out? Sri Krishna Karshani, it makes Krishna the servant. So he doesn't give pure devotional service easily. And he constantly tests us. He says, oh, you say you're ready to pay the price. Okay, well, are you willing to take this instead? I'll make you a deal. I'll cut you a deal. How about this instead? Oh, you won't take that? Well, how about this instead? And how about this instead? And even when we show the utmost determination, we're trying really hard, no, I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want Vilvamangal Dakor. He had poke out his eyes. I don't want this. Right? I don't want this. I don't want to be pulled by my senses. I don't want to be under the control of the ears and the tongue and the nose and the mouth and this sense of touch and lust and desire. I don't want this. But again and again, it happens. So what do we do about it? How Krishna keeps testing us. Are you ready? Are you ready? Or Maya, as his agent, keeps testing us. Are you ready? And if we don't pass the test, then we fall down. We fall back a little bit. And then we have to keep going until Krishna sees that we have 100% desire. 100% desire. And how do we get it? How do we get that desire? Well, Krishna says that Prabhupada says that we get that desire by rendering pure devotional service, and especially by preaching Krishna's glories to others. By preaching Krishna's glories to others, Krishna becomes pleased, and he helps us from within. We read in Bhagavad Gita, he's sitting in our heart. He destroys the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. He purifies us. So we can get the conceptual understanding, but then we get the purity from engaging in devotional service, from engaging in following the order of our spiritual master, and from preaching the glories of Krishna everywhere. Preaching the glories of Krishna everywhere. So it's getting a little late. I'll stop there. And I'll ask us if there's any questions. I have more, but it's late. So, Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
You answered my first question about, you know, well, the Srimad Bhagavatam is building us up so we can hear the 10th canto in the right frame of mind. And I was thinking, well, then why did, you know, before Srila Prabhupada gave us all the Bhagavatams, so he answered that. So then my next question is, when people make comments like that, you know, somebody that hasn't read the whole ninth cantos, or even our own minds going like, what's going on here, you know? What do we say? I guess you, yeah.
Well, you know, what we say is what we, not only what we say, but what we do. That Srila Prabhupada gave us everything from the very beginning. When he gave us the first three volumes of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam written in pidgin unedited English, he said, everything you need is in these books. and he said it again and again as each book came out. Dushruti Kirti said, with every book, he said, all you need is in this, if you just read this one book, you know, and he said it about Krishna book, he said it about Bhagavad Gita, he said it about the first three volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He said it again and again. And also he said it. Not only did he say it in his books, but he said it. He said it in classes. He said it in, you know, we can hear them. They're all archived and taped and recorded for us to hear again and again and again. Prabhupada said it in so many ways, in letters. He said it again and again that what to do, to become qualified, and what the goal was. He told us the goal from the very beginning, and it's interesting, I'm forced by circumstances, if I can find it. Maybe I can't. Should be right here somewhere. Anyway, I don't know where it is. But he gave us the system to become purified from the very beginning. He gave us deity worship here. He says, to subdue lust is a different process. You have to take to deity worship. Krishna is Madan Mahan. You have already stated in your letter, it is very nice that you would very much prefer to channel all your desires to Krishna. And you asked me, how is it possible? This letter was written in 1968. When enveloped in Maya, seeing our material forms. You have also written to say that if you can see the absolute beauty, which is all attractive, then you could not help but be attracted and would scorn mundane beauty. This is actually the remedy. So you may take immediately to Archana, the deity worship. He says, Kirtanananda Maharaj has also begun deity worship in New York and Vrindavan. In New Vrindavan, and Prajumna knows how he is doing. And similarly, in New York, Brahmananda is also engaged in deity worship. And the process is a little difficult in the beginning, but once habituated, it is not at all difficult. So apart from marriage, you may immediately take to deity worship. And he sends a copy of the deity worship process. And he says, that will help you to conquer. He says, I am sure this process, helped by your regular chanting, will kill Mr. Lust. Rest assured. Of course, when you begin, I am at your service always and will give your suggestions and ways and means. So this is Prabhupada. From the very beginning, he gave us the process to conquer Mr. Lust. And when Arjuna asked Krishna, what's causing me to fall down in the material world, Krishna says, it's lust and lust alone. So if you can conquer lust, you've won a significant aspect of the battle. And so Prabhupada told us from the beginning. And he also told us, don't jump over. He also told us, don't run before you can walk. He cautioned us again and again that there's landmines out there. And if you try to run through the landmine field, you're going to blow up. So be very careful. And become, get the Adhikar first. And he gave us the process. Yes. Is that okay?
A good point in the purport was this Aboriginal woman, they were seeing these pastimes like in a mundane way. As soon as they saw they couldn't come, they were getting lustful and everything. But when the smeared on the face and the body, immediately they were passing. So it shows the transcendental potency of that.
Yeah, and Prabhupada compares it. If you look at the metaphor or the simile, whatever, I don't know which one it is, it says when one comes in contact with Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is comparing coming in contact with Krishna consciousness with coming in contact with the kumkum, that it'll remove the lust from ourselves. We don't need kumkum. Yes.
On that point, it brings to mind that verse, the 11.2.42, that three things happen simultaneously, where so that it's based on that satisfaction. It says bhakti, purushaya, anu, bhava, virakti. Yeah. That those three things happen: devotion, direct experience of Krishna, and detachment from all other things, for one who's taken shelter of Krishna, just like when one eats, he gets the satisfaction, nourishment, and he's finished eating.
That happens after anartana vritti. So then we have to go through the anartana vritti stage, and then we become qualified. And if it makes us feel any better, I think someone mentioned not too long ago that our acharyas say that after anartana vritti, it goes really quick. Before an arjuna vritti, it's a little bit slow process. Okay, I should stop there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.